What did you think of the Oscars? What did you think of Toy Story 4 winning animated feature? Oh, yeah? Is Frozen 2 your favorite? Yeah. So, Cadence, you're going to have to go to bed now. Because the following program contains adult language. Yeah, and parental discretion is advised. I'm sorry.
Okay. I am B-rolling now.
I am now rolling.
I am B-rolling, too. Well, not B-rolling, like I'm A-rolling for sure.
Are you rolling?
Like rolling with the homies?
Rolling on the river?
Rolling on the river?
Rolling, 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 rolling.
I'm not dignifying any of this.
Most of these are yours. I'm plagiarizing.
I've evolved.
You're like Shin Godzilla. Yes. Which, by the way, correct. I was watching earlier today. That has gone from my, oh, hey, I like the new Godzilla movie to, like, no, seriously, guys, like, I undersold this movie and you haven't watched it yet. It's really fucking good.
Oh.
All right, well, guys, let's get the...
I'm going to be completely honest about something. I was only writing... watching like half Oscars, half jazz game because I was at the comedy club.
Well, you've never been a telecast watcher, though. I mean, that's an important perspective. I think we can represent that.
I mean, we watched a lot of it, and man, it was not like I thought just on a technical level. Well, we should slate.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know, something about a Wienermobile. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, I'd love to be an Oscar Mayer wiener. That is what I truly like to be. Cause if I were an Oscar Mayer wiener, everyone would be in love with me.
KOKW calling. I'm on international frequency. Come in.
I am Torgo. I take care of the place while the master is away.
He's trying to cheat us, Pepe. All this talk is so he can get a better price, so he can make fools of us.
Yeah, so easy to make a fool of me. Why don't you try it sometime?
Well, I got something done. I got a job at Mr. Greenfeld's sporting goods store, and he promised to do anything he can to help me to get the Texans.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
I had a reason for inviting each guest. I wanted kind of a cross-section. They share one thing, they all need money. Now let's see if they're brave enough to earn it.
And you call this a party?
Could be.
As Oscar Mayer? I could have gone with a carnivorous freshwater fish.
That's just a hair esoteric. Just a hair.
Your hair is esoteric.
Yes, it is. Especially my chin hair.
So
we've never done this before. This is like uncharted territory, yeah, guys.
We've never regrouped and reconciled the checkbook.
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot, but we've never
of course the one year we do it.
Yeah, I had no idea this is what we'd be talking about.
The only year Trevor ever picks good.
No shit. Cadence is in bed right now, right?
Yeah,
he can't like weigh in on the Oscars.
No, he did watch them all though.
Ooh, staying up late.
He stayed up late. It was actually only about an hour past his bedtime. So, you know, it was like 9:30.
Now, for those of you who don't remember, Cadence, whose birth we announced on the show, was like, that was 2 years ago, right? He's two going on three?
He's going on two.
Oh, okay.
We don't know a lot about how kids work, Cameron.
It's okay.
So, like, obviously, I don't think he fully understands the levels and depths and complexities of the roles in Greta Gerwig's Little Women. So, like, what is, what, like, obviously it's color, it's flash, it's good songs, it's clapping. Like, what? How does he engage with it?
Well, there are actually two songs that were performed that he knows already because he's watched Frozen 2 and Toy Story 4. So he knew those songs, and Into the Unknown, honestly, is his, it might be his favorite song right now. He really, really responds to that. So it was really interesting for him to see someone singing it live, and we were telling him that's the real Elsa, you know? So it was actually kind of a cool experience. And then we got to show him that's the real Elsa in this country, and that's the real Elsa in that country, because they did the really cool, did all the different dumb voices.
Well, it was It's a Small World of Into the Unknown.
Yeah.
Into the Small World of the Unknown.
I thought that was pretty cool little stunt.
Actually, we should probably just start the episode. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a very special edition of the Nighthawks podcast, our first ever post-Oscar wrap-up. We have back in the studio with us our special guest and Oscar czar, as well as house musician for the podcast, Mr. Cameron Maris. Cameron, how are you?
Doing well, Trevor. Thank you. It's great to be here once again. And great to be here after the show. Got my Oscar hangover. The Oscars were just last night, so a little tired.
In the conceptual diner with me, as always, is the other co-host for the show.
Hey, y'all. It's me, Matt. I identify myself with one syllable someone else chose.
And so, yeah, this is exciting, guys. Our first post-Oscar kind of, I don't know, let's call this the post-mortem. I don't know. Yeah, that's an old news thing. I'm not being morbid.
It's literally the Oscar hangover show. That's how I feel about it.
Speaking of hangovers, we do know that director Bong Joon-ho planned on consuming some liquor after the party.
Yeah, I wonder how director Bong is feeling today.
Well, I think I managed to psychically tap into director Bong Joon-ho, and somehow I hefted some of his hangover because I felt weird today. Like, I was happy. I was really happy. And we'll get into the actual reactions here in a minute. But, like, I felt just kind of in a daze all day where I'm just like, wow, that really happened. And I wasn't sick. I wasn't lightheaded. I wasn't pukey or anything. But I did have that kind of, I don't know, hangover vacancy that you get where you just lose yourself in thought for a minute. And yeah.
Welcome to hangover, being into the Oscars, a good way of putting Trevor. It only took us 5 years, but we did it. We made you an Oscar fan.
Well, I was always an Oscar fan. I mean,
if you remember, our first episode that we did was called Oscar the Grouch, and you guys were both strictly anti-Oscar. And now Trevor is winning Oscar pools and picking the
winner.
This
was the year that I didn't have anything pissy to say.
I got something
Trevor
pissy to say this year.
All of the Best Picture nominees this year, all 9 movies, isn't that right?
Yeah, and I liked every single one of them.
Amazing. That is...
Do you mean to tell me they didn't even do 10 movies this year?
No, Uncut Gems did not make the cut. So Matt, yeah, let's start with that. Let Uncut Gems unfairly treated, you think, huh?
Definitely should have been a Best Actor and a Best Picture nominee.
Best Actor going, of course, to Adam Sandler, right?
Yeah. It's absolutely just got punished for other Adam Sandler movies. And if there's any sort of empiricism to subjecticism at all, there's, you know.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what you're saying. I think that Sandler could have been in the top 5. I think there was room for him in that category. I think that's probably I think that's the consensus pick for his career best work, I would say, isn't it?
Well, I would say as of this moment, yeah. And also, like, the editing, the entire, like, it's obviously, like, it's kind of, to me, it's kind of a Birdman. Like, it's not a flashy production, but it's so tight and tense and like, I was telling somebody today that I would rank it, like, there aren't very many movies that ever truly agitate me. And I would put it like, the only other ones I can think of are Audition and Aronofsky's Mother.
Ooh, yeah.
I would put Uncut Gems in that category with them. So, I mean, that's high praise for me, because I'm like, oh, look, the Pinhead's tearing apart with fish hooks. That's cool. You know, like, I'm pretty hard to get. Like, yeah. I think I've told the story on the podcast before, but we were in a showing of a premiere showing of Raw where they serve steak tartare.
Right.
And like I got three peoples because they were like, ugh, no, I'm good. And I'm like, well, we ain't giving that. That's not going to the dogs, man.
That's steak tartare. Speaking of weird movies that people probably would not have heard of until today, how did the Oscars 2020 leave y'all?
Well, I just want to say, first of all, congratulations to the first annual Nighthawks Oscar pool champion, Trevor T. Trujillo.
I'm clasping my hands above my head.
Well done, sir. 2,400 out of 3,300 points. It was a close race for a while, not between you and I, because I failed miserably. My bracket was ruined early on. My bracket got all fucked up. And so I was mostly just rooting for you all night, you and Hallie. And it was a strong performance, man. That was pretty impressive. And I guess you were pretty much carried by what we can start up off our conversation with, which is Parasite.
I'm so happy.
Parasite, 4 Academy Awards. All of those Oscars go to Bong Joon-ho.
A couple of other people, too,
but he's on every single award. So he personally has all four of the, you know, he has statuettes for all four awards. That's really, really crazy. Like, that's super rare to get 4 in 1 year. Of course, I think he's, you know, helped a little bit by the fact that it's a foreign film. A foreign language film, and he is eligible for that international Oscar, which is sort of the cherry on top. But man, what a huge, huge night for Parasite and for South Korean film, really.
Yeah, that's the most exciting part for me. But just like a little anecdote, have you guys heard the rumor that he like very sincerely apologized to the engraver for having to write his name four times? Like, he actually felt bad.
Yeah. They actually have to get them engraved themselves at the party afterward. They have to take them up to the engraver and get them engraved. So that's really interesting. That's funny.
You wouldn't expect to hear that from Brad Pitt. And not that Brad Pitt's not a nice guy, but like, wow, just like, what a guy, you know?
Well, when Brad Pitt wins 4 Oscars in one night, I mean, then we can see how he
Hey-o.
Acts.
Quick question, though, about our scoring methodology. Did you use the handicap values on the form?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
So it was like a tiered ranking.
I was running
ranking.
Through it in my head, and I didn't think I did that bad on the like the pure just numbers of hits and misses.
No, you actually finished just below me, Matt, which is, you know, I don't think I did that badly either. You had 1,300 points on this scale out of 3,300. I had 1,400, so you were literally just 100 points below me. But Trevor blew us both away. Yeah, the difference of one category, essentially. But Trevor blew us both away.
Curse you, Trevor.
There's no talent to this, guys. This was dumb luck. I went through the list, and I'm like, okay, what did we talk about in the episode? And I remembered who the front runners were. And then there was just a couple of key categories where I'm like, I don't know if I want to go with the favorite on this one. I think I want this to be my Cameron Maris upset. And I guess I just did that on the right category. And then it all came down. There was another gentleman that we were kind of in with just socially. He had been leading me most of the night, and then we were like pretty neck and neck, and then it all came down to Best Picture.
Yeah, it really came down to Best Director. When Director Bong won Best Director, you took a very slight lead And then, of course, you both picked both Best Actor and Best Actress. And then right there at the end, you swept in with Best Pick. I mean, it really came to, if it would have been 1917, he probably would have, yeah, he would have taken it. So it really just came down to that one category.
Huh, yeah. Well, that's what got you, Trevor. You backed a horse all the way. You're like, that's my pony.
And that's exactly what I did, but with a different movie that didn't win anything. So,
well, and what's funny is like you realized it real early on that like, oh shit, this did not go the way I wanted it to.
Once Bong won screenplay over Tarantino, it was pretty much guaranteed that it was not going to be Once Upon a Time in Hollywood's Night. And that's fine. I mean, they won two awards. That's not bad. They won one of the acting awards. That's great. Brad Pitt. That was a pretty big win. So, and then they also won for production design. So I'm happy with that. And of course, I'm happy to, you know, I like the surprises. You know, the problem is I pick surprises in too many categories, I think, to really be competitive. But it's fun. And when you hit on one, it's really fun. And Trevor, you hit on one that I think wasn't the biggest surprise in the world, but because I think it was one of two big possibilities. But I think it was the second biggest possibility going into the evening, in as far as the odds were concerned.
I was willing it to happen. Like, I was sitting there in front of the screen looking at it, and I was watching Jane Fonda's mouth. And I'm looking if she's going to make a plosive or if it's going to be like a soft consonant. And I'm just like, I'm on tenterhooks, and I'm like, and she's going to say peh, peh, peh. But when she did it, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, oh, shit, she fucked up. It's another Warren Beatty moment. Like, something went wrong. This isn't real. These things don't happen to me.
What do you think? Do you think they had to have a huddle, like a pregame? They took all the hosts and they were like, first guy says La La Land, thinks it's funny, goes back on the list with Trumbo.
Oh, this is why I love having you on the show.
I'm glad I'm good for something.
That's what I appreciates about you.
Was that what you appreciates about me?
Oh, shit. We went down a Letterkenny...
quick momentary digression.
Sure.
Has everybody here watched Letterkenny?
No, I have not.
I'm sorry.
Okay, well, that's a mistake. Yeah, we'll have to correct that. Oscar for Best Canadian Series.
Actually, there is a soundbite being passed around currently where Brad Pitt admitted backstage that he was a Letterkenny fan. And so that's currently making the rounds.
Of course, he's a good person.
And how about Brad Pitt? Like, we're not real formal tonight. Let's hop around. Like, good on Brad Pitt. Now, this is number two, Cameron, or is this his first?
Well, it's his first for acting.
First for acting, he has the producing one. That's right.
Yeah, he has 12 Years a Slave, Best Picture.
So weird to think of him being involved with 12 Years a Slave.
Well, he was in the movie, too. He also acted in it with a pretty small role. But he was one of the credited producers for the Academy Awards that year. And
let me guess, he was the lovable hero?
He was, yeah. At the end of the movie, I don't want to give anything away. I don't want to spoil 12 Years a Slave. You guys haven't dropped a spoiler curtain for me. But yes, he is... he's the nice white guy.
The alternative.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
This is a very strange little episode we're doing.
Well, it's just, you know, we're around the table. We're having coffee, talking about what just happened. I'm over the moon, and like, also big ups to Taika Waititi. Like, yes. Thank you. It got something, and it went to him. So I'm like, I'm super happy with that, too.
I think what you're trying to say is there's a lot of Fantastic Fest. I mean, the Fantastic Fest movies swept the screenplay categories. Do you realize that?
Back to back, dude. That was unreal. That was an unreal experience. And see, and this is why I'm tap dancing around it. Yes, Cameron, you are absolutely correct. I went from a, I'm a casual fan of the Oscars. I watch, and I get ticked off every now and then, and I swear I'm up. That was my whole thing, and then I'm literally in tears last night.
And it was a big night for those movies.
Yeah, and, you know, and I wasn't even at Fantastic Fest when these movies played. And it's just the fact that I know that these directors, these artists, have brought so much joy to these people whom I have gone to festivals with. The people who have still gone to Fantastic Fest and have continued to go.
Hey, we continue to go. We're just on hiatus.
Well, yeah, we're planning on going back. If anybody knows anybody with a connection, put in a good word for us. But
don't look too eager.
And Fantastic Fest, that's their thing. I was excited for Jojo Rabbit. I was excited for Parasite long before the awards season ever kicked off.
For sure.
And it's because the people who are there do the thing 100%. And they're not... Yeah, you can get a selfie if you catch a filmmaker at the right time and they're amenable to that. It happens. But that's not why people are there. They're not there to bump into Taika Waititi or Bong Joon-ho or Elijah Wood or Aunt Timpson or whatever. They're there to see a ton of really good movies. And they want nothing more than to get other people excited about those movies and share that experience with them. And what happened last night is not just like, oh, wow, look what happened to the two movies that came to the festival and the filmmakers were there and they're friends with some of the festival goers. And it was a big, like, that's all really cool. It's a cool story to tell. But what happened last night was that the Hollywood studio system looked at my friends and looked at the people I love and said, you were right. And they deserve that. They have deserved that for a long time. And it's just, it's validation.
That's awesome.
And it may never, ever happen again. But you know what? This has put some eyes on some really fantastic artists, and that means some shit.
You know, Trevor, I think it kind of goes to something that you've been saying for a while about a resurgence of sincerity in art. Because I think that's one common thread between both Parasite and Jojo Rabbit is a sincerity in the message and in the style of the filmmaking, despite the fact that they're very, very different films that couldn't be more stylistically diverse. I think that there's a sincerity that plays in those movies that is pretty uncommon, and I think that that really translated this year and really meant something to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's good to send a message about, you know, not trusting your help. I think that's important. run background checks on everybody.
That's an important message, especially now in today's world.
You know, I have to confess, I woke up a little feisty this morning, and I was expecting a lot more pushback than anything got. It turns out that I totally called this wrong, and that this was the least viewed Oscars in history, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. The ratings were down 20% from last year, and last year they were only up 15% from the year before. So do the math.
Yeah, so that sucks. But you know what?
I don't understand. Didn't Joker make $1 billion fucking dollars?
Yeah, But like, it's also really fucking hard to watch the Oscars. I had,
I guess,
a nightmare of a time trying to find a way to watch the Oscars. Yeah, now, if this was the 21st century, we would pay for a subscription service or an app or something, and we could just watch the motherfucker. But no, because it's tied up in this bullshit appointment broadcast television contract from 1932, I couldn't stream the goddamn thing, and I had to do this weird mad dash to find a television.
That's why this program is sponsored, as it is every year in the Oscars, broadcast by antennas. The way to watch network TV since 19-something. Antennas.
And that's fine. Just turns out that for some reason, in the building that I'm in, that's the one channel we can't get with an antenna.
That's crazy. Come on, Disney, you know, strengthen your signal. Disney owns ABC.
You know what else has an antenna? Parasites.
Ooh. Parasites.
You know what we don't talk enough about? Vaginas.
Yes, I have so many questions.
I have so many questions.
Like, what is this and why would I want to put it there?
I don't know. We should bring somebody in to talk about that. Why does it look that way?
Let me look that up real quick.
Do you know, do you ever, like, you know, touch it?
I mean, yeah, but, like, can I touch it?
Should you touch it?
Oh my god, please, let's find out together.
Yes, come take a stroll with us down Petticoat Lane.
This is a Hello Sweetie Podcast Network production.
So let's talk a little about Parasite. I'm really excited that a lot of people are going to be watching it now because, and I'll tell you what, the response to it has been far above my expectations. Like, I love that that's the response, but
it's really mind-blowing how universally accepted this movie has been.
Yeah, because it's not for everyone. Like, Parasite was the best movie of the year. I'll give it that. The movie I've recommended to most out of the whole slew of them was Jojo Rabbit, though, because I didn't think Parasite was super accessible. Like, if you like to sit there, if at the end of the movie, you sit there and go, holy shit, wait a minute, I don't think I got that. And then part of the fun of what you enjoy of the movie is trying to figure out whether or not you got it. And then you have to figure out if the headcanon you're deploying is correct, and you run it through a few different scenarios, and does this fit, does this fit, does this fit? And then you have to decide if you like it.
Which for me was the longest step.
And you know what? Yeah, like like when the movie turned off, I was like, first of all, I was like, wow, holy shit, that was a really powerful statement. But like, overall, did I like the movie? And man, I had to think about that for a minute. And I did. I really do like this movie.
I'm still letting Parasite percolate a little, you know? Gotta let that one marinate for a minute.
Of course, I'm still marinating on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, too. Like, you know, we haven't had the benefit of being able to watch these movies two or three times to really pick them apart, you know?
You know what happens to me with Tarantino movies, speaking of picking stuff apart? It's like you get in these cinephile conversations where inevitably you rank one Tarantino movie against another one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's that whole, you know, the 100-point granularity scale conversation.
It's one of our favorite conversations.
And like, there's like people that are like, oh, I don't know. I don't think maybe that The Hateful Eight's not really like it's good. Like, it's a good bullshit session, but it's not really a I mean, it's limited in utility as a movie per se. And they're like, what did you say about my children? You know, and so my problem is, of course, I'm that guy that if I end up in that conversation, then I'm going to look for things, you know? And, like I have one big criticism of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's kind of hard to discuss without spoiling it, but it's not bad. It's just a little personal axe I'm grinding. And no, it's not the feet thing.
The feet thing is there, though.
Yeah, I think people just need to get over the feet thing. I mean,
well, the feet thing doesn't bother me.
We've talked about it long enough. It's a thing. It's going to be there. Expect it if you're going into a Tarantino movie. And just let it go.
The past is in the past.
Anybody but me watch Birds of Prey?
I have not. I'm looking forward to it.
It's actually a hoot.
See, I'm in the crowd that was like,
I got it.
Oh, you know, DC has disappointed me so many times. I'm not going to rush out and see this.
No.
And like,
that's going to sink the DC extended universe.
Well, here's the thing. The DC fanboys, ever since we launched the Snyder continuity, have been claiming that the critics are being paid off by Marvel to conspire against DC to wreck their box office. It's ridiculous. There's not a single film critic I know that is well paid enough to be taking bribes.
You didn't get your Marvel check this month?
Ah, shit, dude, that shit bounced. Bubble's popping, man. It's popping. But now the critics are like, hey, Birds of Prey is really good, guys. Like, hey, they finally did it. And the DC fans are like, what? Birds of... What? No.
Make us a Harley Quinn movie. No, not like that. I don't know. I don't know what to think about that, but I liked it. I had fun.
Well, and that does inevitably bring us to Joker. Hildur Gonardotur.
Not bad. That's about as close as
I'm going to get.
Yuner's Dieter?
A hats off to Todd on that one, who sent us a handy mnemonic.
Oh, but, yeah, I saw that.
Here's what I'm going to say about Joker. Like, I went in, if there was an axe to grind for me in this race, it was against Joker. And that's because there was some personal politics involved. But it was neither here nor there. I had other favorite movies. I like Joker. It's a good movie. Here's what I will say. It deserved every award it got.
Yeah, so let's just put it out there. Joker went 2 for 11, but the two that it won were Best Actor for Joaquin Phoenix and Best Original Score for Hildur Guldenator, only the fourth woman ever to win in a scoring category, and the first woman ever to do it solo, not as part of a duo with a man. So I think that's super significant, and hats off to her.
That's so strange. Like, you don't think of scoring as involving a lot of upper body strength. You know, like how, it's odd. It's odd that everything is segregated.
It took me a second to figure out where you were going with that, but then I'm with you now. I was like, the Oscars kind of heavy. But yeah, and then we had and Joaquin Phoenix, fantastic performance. He created a fantastic, and this is, in and of itself, it's got a little trivia to it, Cameron. Now remind me how this goes. He is only the second actor to win an Oscar for a character who has been played by somebody else that won an Oscar in that performance.
That's a really complicated way to say it, but yes. Joker is the second character that has been portrayed in two distinct Academy Award winning performances.
Okay, yeah, that was
In the case of... In the case of the Joker, of course, it is now Joaquin Phoenix for Joker and the late Heath Ledger for The Dark Knight, won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. Rest in peace to Heath Ledger. But the other one is Vito Corleone in The Godfather and The Godfather Part 2. And that, of course, is Marlon Brando. Rest in peace, Marlon Brando and Robert De Niro.
I'm now picturing Dustin Hoffman
as Vito.
Made him an offer he couldn't refuse.
You know who I'm surprised is not part of this conversation?
Montreal steak seasoning?
Always. But I was actually going to say Lady Gaga for playing the girl in A Star Is Born, which I'm actually, now that I walked out on the ice, come to think of it, I don't know that Streisand was nominated. I just assumed she was.
She was, and she won, but Gaga didn't.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, you know.
Yeah, nominated, sure. Is what it is. I mean, there have been a lot of characters that have been nominated in multiple performances. One that I can think of for sure right off the top of my head is Queen Elizabeth. Not the current one, but Queen Elizabeth I was portrayed in two performances that were nominated in the same year. I think in 1998, she was played by Cate Blanchett in the movie Elizabeth, and Judi Dench at an older age in Shakespeare in Love in the same year. So there have been lots that have been nominated, but as far as winning performances goes, Joker is only the second one that has been portrayed by two different actors, both winning Oscars.
We're getting almost granular enough for it to be a fantastic Las Vegas parlay for, say, a compulsive gambler. Well, why shouldn't we snub him?
So, also, we need to mention... Here, let me just, let me get him on the phone.
Oh, man.
Marty, I'm sorry.
Marty.
I'm sorry your movie didn't win anything.
0-10, Marty.
The Pope didn't win.
Pope didn't win?
And the Pope's the Pope.
There's
two
Popes.
You're just Marty. And you know what? I'm going to say the winner of Bong Joon-ho's acceptance speech was you.
I would say most definitely Bong Joon-ho made Marty feel like he was a winner too. And he needed that after falling asleep during the Eminem performance.
So, Marty, yeah, I'm sorry, but, you know, you're working again. 0-10,
my bet came through, though. Irishman went 0-10. The only Best Picture nominee that didn't win an Oscar was The Irishman.
Well, you know, I've got a theory about that.
Okay, go for it.
Marty, movie's too fucking long, Marty.
Movie's too fucking long, Marty.
You're making television.
That was I think Chris Rock had one of the better jokes of the night when he said, Martin Scorsese, I loved the first season of The Irishman.
Wait, can he do that? Can you mock Scorsese?
He got Chris away Rock with it. Can. Scorsese laughed at the joke, so it worked.
You know, honestly, I'm gonna reveal my deep psychology here. My classic touchstone for like Scorsese culturally is just that the good feathers always wanted to perch on his head. Like, remember that Animaniacs with the pigeons? And it was the good feathers. And they always wanted to perch on Scorsese's head. It was the best place in the park.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that The Irishman didn't win anything, but you know what? We keep talking about different categories where there was room for X in that category. There was room for more women in that category. There was room for a different movie in that category. every single time that conversation comes up, you know which movie I'm kicking out.
Yeah.
It's The Irishman. Like, it's a good movie. I'm going to watch it again. Like, I will, this will be something that I will watch again. It's like Deadwood. I'm just going to, once every couple years, pull it out of the box, savor it like a very beautiful cigar or a nice brandy, watch it over a few nights, and then put it back. But it just was not the best film of the year. Like, I think it and Joker were both over-nominated.
I think The Irishman had so much prestige built in to the movie that there was sort of a feeling of how could you not nominate it. I think the expectations were really, really high. And I also think that there is a certain segment of Hollywood that really likes that Netflix really swung for the cheap seats with, you know what I mean? Like, they really swung hard with this movie and this partnership with Scorsese. And I think that, you know, that there's a lot of people that nominated it, but I think in the end, when the larger Academy saw it, you know, and compared it to the rest of the movies and saw all of the movies, I think that it was, you know, happy to be nominated.
Yeah, I just wish some other stuff had been nominated, you know?
Yeah, of course. Sure.
Like, but at the same time, I'm also not upset with any of the races. Like, having Greta Gerwig in the Best Director category instead of Martin Scorsese is not going to change the fact that I am over the fucking moon that Director Bong got it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I wish, like, why does the world not love Greta Gerwig yet? Why hasn't this happened?
Well, Greta Gerwig, yeah, once again, left with no Oscars, but her partner Noah Baumbach doesn't have any Oscars either, and he didn't win any for Marriage Story, so they're both still waiting.
Well, and
but she'll make something great next. I'm excited to see what she does next.
Mm-hmm. And I am ready for Saoirse Ronan. I'm saying her name wrong. I'm ready for her to be the next Daniel Day-Lewis tier level actress or performer, I guess, in that I want her to just carefully select her shit from this point forward, because I need her nominated until she fucking wins. She deserves it.
She'll be nominated next year too. I really, really do.
And like Daniel Day-Lewis, I want all of those roles to be carefully selected, and I want it to be news when she picks one. Like, she's that good. Now, that being said, she can take whatever fucking role she wants. You know, it's her career, it's her life. She needs to do the thing that's most rewarding. But, like, I wish we could make that big of a deal about her, because she's that good.
She's going to be in the next Wes Anderson movie.
I cannot believe how on board I was with Little Women. Like, that is so not a movie in my wheelhouse. That is not a movie. I've never seen any version of Little Women. I have never made it a point to read the book. Holy God, was I invested in that film.
That's awesome.
Like, I was angry texting you. There were some decisions made in that film I did not approve of. But you know what? They don't need my approval or my validation.
That's true. They don't, Trevor. They don't need anything from you.
Exactly. I watched that movie and now I know. And knowing is half the battle.
Females is strong as hell, Trevor.
One.
That's right.
Two. Three. Four. Girl, come on. Unbreakable. They alive. Damn it. It's America.
And while we're talking about Little Women, let's go ahead and say...
How little are they? Like knee-high? What are they, like Smurfs?
They are small ladies.
Tiny ladies. No, we need to mention, while we're talking about Little Women, that they did win one Academy Award for Best Costume Design. That's actually a really cool element of the movie. Actually, I learned from my partner, Hallie. She was looking up some information about the costumes on Little Women, and they were all designed after dresses in actual period paintings from the Little Women period. So those are all dresses that were designed in from actual period art. So I think that is really quite incredible, and I think that's it shows in the movie. It's incredible detail and very intricate, gorgeous, gorgeous costuming. Jacqueline Duran, this is her second Academy Award.
Thank you for looking that up.
Yeah, Jacqueline Duran. I didn't look it up. I already knew.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't have their names in front of me, but, like, watching the acceptance speech there, I want to go over to your house and just have you tell me everything.
Yeah, she's very, like, they just, very cool.
I was puzzled by some of the entries in that category, but period pieces generally do give the costume designer, like, the most to do, you know? Like, nobody's ever going, like, they knocked themselves out having them wear their own clothes in Marriage Story.
No, usually it's period pieces, fantasy, sci-fi. That's usually where those things shine.
Yeah. Most of the artistic categories, you could pretty much say that about, actually.
What do you guys think about Marriage Story? Like, it's one of those, like, the comparison I drew was to Ordinary People.
Yeah, or Kramer versus Kramer actually is a really good parallel.
You know, and I've seen neither of those because this is so not my lane. But
yeah, where they're just like, it's a movie where dramatic events transpire and,
acting.
You know, and they're not much.
But you know what I will say is that, number one, this is not a movie I would have enjoyed when I was younger and not too long ago. But this scratched a really weird itch for me, and maybe it's just me inching ever closer to that inevitable Wilford Brimley line. But, like, this gave me such a pang of nostalgia of watching movies, like, in my family room with my parents. And, like, just pensive adult dramas.
It wants to be us.
Where family things happen, you know? Just family dramas. The shit that I would never rent in a million years, but it's stuff that my folks liked and that I watched with them when I was young because that's what was on the TV. And this kind of hit me, and I'm like, you know what? I need to slice a little more just adult drama in my life, you know? It's time to settle down. Not everything has to be chainsaws and you know, full frontal wang. You know, sometimes you got to watch a pensive adult drama. And so I think that's going to be my new goal this year, is I'm going to watch some more relationship dramas, some more I don't know, good for you films, I guess. Going to give it a spin. I don't know if I'm going to like it, but
come on, Mac. It's cold in here. Let me out.
You're really growing as a person, Trevor. I really appreciate that.
I just think I'm getting old and I don't like being challenged anymore. Like, have to force challenges on myself. Like, you need to watch more accessible dramas.
Eat your broccoli. Floss.
And trust me on the sunscreen.
So while we're on the subject of Marriage Story, it bears saying that Marriage Story did win one Academy Award, since that's what we're talking about, for Laura Dern for Best Supporting Actress.
Laura. Apparently, I'm the only person on the planet who, like, agrees with that. But
no, she won, like, every single precursor award for the Oscar. I don't think there was ever a question in anyone's mind. I picked Florence Pugh, but that was my call for an upset, and of course it didn't happen. So,
and she was exceptional.
Congratulations,
too.
Laura Dern, Academy Award winner.
But yeah, like, there was just not a ton of Laura Dern love in my echo chamber. There was kind of like, and I think part of the brilliance of her performance is how understated it is. It's not necessarily the most acting, but there is a lot of acting going on. And it's not for everybody, and I can dig that too.
Yeah, I like it more and more the more I see of it. The more subtleties and intricacies I see of the performance, the more times I see it, the more I like it.
Well, so, and it's so muted.
For what it's worth.
Against what Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson get to do. Because they get to go full tilt boogie. They just bury their emotions in the red, and there's tears and screaming, and they say awful, awful things to each other, and it's heated and passionate.
Turn it up to 11.
And as much as that is a thing, Laura Dern's character is very much also a force to be reckoned with, but it is all subdued. She never gets to get there.
I'm going to be honest, I was rooting against them.
Against Laura Dern?
Driver and Johansson. I mean, I just think how elongated their offspring would be. It's necessary for them to fail.
Oh my God.
Look like the aliens from Cocoon. Just
it's all coming back to Wilford Brimley.
It all goes back to Cocoon.
Well, that actually does bring this whole, like, four-hour epic full circle. So, any last thoughts on the Oscars?
I mean, I'll probably watch them next year. You know, they've bought themselves some time.
I actually did put together a little preview for the listeners about things to look for in the coming year. Since I've never gotten to do one of these things, I thought I would take the floor for a second. And actually, I did set aside a couple that I'm really looking forward to that I think are relevant to the podcast and possibly listeners to the podcast. First of all, I think the one that I'm looking forward to, and I think everybody should be looking forward to, that I think could be a possible Oscar contender, is Denis Villeneuve's Dune.
Mm-hmm.
That's happening, and that has Timothée Chalamet in the lead role, and I think that's, I mean, he, of course, was last nominated for Arrival, which we talked about extensively a couple Oscar episodes back. It was almost exclusively our favorite movie of that year, and so now he's got Dune, and I think this could be huge. But we've also got Christopher Nolan. We'll be back with Tenet. Justice for Christopher Nolan. Come on. The man needs an Oscar. We've been talking about giving him an Oscar since Inception. Inception came and went, no Oscar. Interstellar came and went, no Oscar. Dunkirk. He did a World War II movie, no Oscar. He'll be back. So looking forward to that one. Steven Spielberg is doing a new West Side Story. That should be fun. Wes Anderson.
What?
Steven Spielberg is adapting West Side Story again, adapting it from the stage show again, with a closer adaptation to the stage show. With Baby Driver, Anson Elgort in the lead role.
Okay.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Sure.
You know,
There are ways to make West Side Story very relevant for today's times.
Yeah, and but I think is Steven that Spielberg is the one that's going to do it?
I don't know. What else is he doing?
See, we'll follow a young lead that's a young police officer, and he meets a girl that was raised in the culture of neoliberal fascism. And they'll learn they aren't so different. No, sorry, I'm not allowed to do that.
Yeah, Matt, you're foreshadowing.
Oh, hey, quick rollback that we kind of neglected to discuss. 1917?
Yeah, 1917 won 3 Oscars.
Not just right, not enough?
I feel too like many? It was just about right. That was my pick for Best Director. I thought it was going to win Best Director. So I think it won less Oscars than a lot of people thought it was going to. I think a lot of people had it picked for Best Picture. And that was sort of the big surprise because it did win the Producers Guild for Best Picture. It won the BAFTA for Best Picture. It won the Golden Globe for Best Picture. It pretty much ran the table on a lot of the precursors. And so that's kind of what makes Parasite the big surprise, is that it kind of stole those from 1917. But it was awarded in technical categories, and I think the big one there was Roger Deakins, of course, winning his second Oscar in 3 years after a lifetime full of nominations.
I'd also, I want to shout out Roger Deakins and Joaquin Phoenix for having probably the most real human moments on stage. Like, you can just tell that they just went up there and winged it. Well, and Director Bong, for that matter.
I think the best speeches of the night were Director Bong and Brad Pitt for me. I thought Brad Pitt was excellent.
Brad Pitt happened at a point where I was still scrambling for a TV, so I missed his.
That's true. You got to go back and watch that one on YouTube.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm kind of, I don't know if we need to. Again, I don't know. Do the Oscars even need to be live? Do we need Eminem with the song from the thing from before?
Well, there was a lot of confusion around that. Like, Cameron and I don't know why that little piece of trivia stuck with me. But, like, the Eminem performance, Cameron, was kind of a redemption. It was a redemption run from when he did not perform Lose Yourself the year that Lose Yourself won Best Song at the Oscars.
Yeah, like, he was nominated, but he personally was just, like, too sauced or something that night, or, like, wouldn't play ball with the people, or?
There's a couple of, I was actually reading about it just today, there's a couple of different stories that are floating around now as to why he didn't go to the Oscars, and the big one is, I don't think he was really with it. I think he was on drugs, personally, at that time. That was kind of when he was sliding into a pretty serious pill addiction. But he was saying that he didn't really, like, understand what he was nominated for. He didn't really, like, understand what the different awards he was nominated for were. He was kind of, he didn't go to every award ceremony he was nominated for sure. But he never showed up to his Oscars that he was nominated for. He said he didn't think he was going to win. That was the big reason that he gave. He didn't think he was going to win, and he did. He won. And so now, 18 years later, he actually tweeted about it. He said, "Thank you, Academy, for letting me finally show up 18 years late." And I think he's just sort of in a place now where he, you know, appreciates the recognition a little more. And he's sober now. He's been sober now for 10 years. Yeah, it was a huge surprise. It was very, very cool for me. I'm a fan. A stan, if you will, but so it was a very cool moment for me to see that finally happen, because I mentioned, as I was saying a couple Oscar episodes ago, that Eminem was not there and did not perform the year that he ended up winning the Academy Award for Best Original Song. So I thought it was cool that they gave him a moment to come back, and they accepted him to come back, and they invited him. His palm spaghetti, knees weak, arm spaghetti, there's vomit on his sweater, spaghetti, mom spaghetti, he's nervous, but on the surface he looks calm, spaghetti, to drop palms, but he keeps on spaghetti, what he wrote down, the whole crowd goes spaghetti, he opens his mouth, but spaghetti won't come out, he's choking, how, everybody's choking now, spaghetti's run out, time's up, over, blah.
That kind of brings me to, I suppose, what might be my final thought on the Oscars. Can we just have Cynthia Erivo sing them next year?
Yeah, she was incredible.
She had the performance of the night for me.
Every once in a while, the bard leads the party.
For me, it was Janelle Monáe with that opening number. Man,
that was a hell of an opening
mind.
Number. That was
I
a
loved
hell of an opening
that
number.
Opening number. And shout out to Janelle Monáe for very subtly placing the words "Oscar so white" in her song. I guarantee you that was not the version of the lyrics that she submitted to ABC's censors. So good for her for giving a little subtle protest moment right there in the opening. I heard it live, and I turned to Hallie and I said, "Did you hear that?" And she didn't. But when we went back and watched it later, I replayed it. And sure enough, she definitely said "Oscar so white" in the opening number song.
Huh. Oh, yeah. I mean, that happened.
Wow. That flew past me. Holy crap.
Go back and watch it on YouTube. She absolutely says it.
And the fabulousness quotient was so high that it went right by.
Oh,
yeah, yes. And I mean, the lyrics were happening very fast. And everything was, you know, it was a really hectic moment. And she was actually moving across the stage as she said it. And it was almost like it was a scattered line, you know, like it was sort of in the middle of the chorus. And it almost sounded like the original line could have been "Oscars so wild" or something like that. The Oscars are so wild, but she definitely says "Oscars so white."
Well,
yeah.
Where's the lie?
You know, not unfair.
No, definitely well deserved. And you know, those are the kind of little moments that are fun to watch for. And to top it off, I mean, her performance was phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Holy God, that was incredible. But I still got to give it to Cynthia Erivo. Like,
okay.
I don't know, and I think it's just because I love that song so much. But
well, it is also a remedial El Royale Oscar.
You know, she will get justice for Cynthia Erivo. That will happen. She will.
She did
get
not
one.
Win an Oscar. She did not complete her EGOT, but it will happen. Come on, it'll happen.
And I think it's going to happen soon.
It's just pretty good. Theo's optional.
All right. Well, our half hour episode has turned into an hour. We did another Irishman. Guys.
You can't go back in time, Marty. You just got to show De Niro as his own age, Marty.
Podcast's too fucking long, guys.
Nobody wants 3 hours of De Niro and Kenny Valley, Marty.
Hey, you had to vamp a little about Parasite. You had to get that out. I like that you did.
Cameron, thanks for stopping by. We're going to put you back into the walk-in freezer cold storage for another spell. One of these days, we're going to get you on just for an episode.
Hey, I just want to say, while I'm in cold storage, I'm going to be watching for Joel Cohen's Macbeth. That's another one on my list with Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand.
Ooh. Wait, just one Cohen?
Yeah, it's just one Cohen this time.
Too much Shakespeare for that. Both.
It's
the
his
Coens.
first solo directorial work. Huh. Anyway, what is
the division of responsibility like? What do we know about that?
I don't know. Well, I'm sure we'll find out more.
I don't really know how one co-directs
with your brother too. Man,
right?
Feels like it would be hard.
Do you think they ever like have really awkward screaming conversations on set that just makes everybody else feel awkward, but they know that they're just gonna hug it out at the end?
it's just Joel and Ethan, guys. It's just how they work.
What did the McElroys call it on their TV show? Like perfectly legitimate brother energy, but like really bad professional energy.
Yeah,
the McElroys.
Yeah, I like me some my brother and me, a rival podcast on another network. Speaking of which, we are proud members of the Hello Sweetie Podcast Network, which I think we forgot to mention in the last episode, but that's a thing. Be sure to check out Geek Parenting Podcast, now back off of, after a short hiatus. They got some goodies for you. And
does that hiatus ending mean that you can get the coffees again?
That I don't know. You'll have to report. You're my boots on the ground in the parts unknown Utah there.
Karen, those are two.
Who wants to send us out?
Is that a wrap?
Yeah, or are we just going to be quiet and then end the episode?
I'm sorry, was I supposed to say something? Boots on the ground in Utah, that's me. Parts unknown.
Yeah, we have to come up with a way to get out of here, or we have to start doing ASMR.
I thought you had already shut me off in the freezer.
Oh, no.
Oh, I thought you'd shut the freezer door.
I guess I'm going to actually literally find the sound effects to lock you in the freezer.
I mean, you keep saying you're going to put me in cold storage, so well, I guess I'm preparing for
that. I'm stressing
the
diner metaphor, you know? There's a version of the diner that's a monster, Cameron. Where do you live then?
Hey, I just want to say thank you for joining me on this Oscars journey this year, gentlemen, and especially you, Trevor. congratulations once again for your big victory, and to Parasite for its big victory.
Hell yeah.
And I'll get you next year, buddy.
Yeah.
Next year there won't be a Tarantino film, so I will be impartial as fuck, and I will win the second annual Nighthawks Oscar pool.
Well, thanks for tuning in, folks, but we've got to go because it's almost morning.
Must always be kept in balance.
I said sit down.
Passengers, eternal order flows from the sacred engine. We must occupy our preordained position. I belong to the front. You belong to the tail. Know your place. Keep your place.
Those bastards in the front think they own us.
We'll be different when we get there.
What you say?
We take the engine. And we control the world.
When is the time?
Soon.
This is disorder.
We're going to the front. Open the gate.
We know you well, Mr. Curtis. We've been watching you. Precisely 74% of you shall die.
Everybody back!
I'm not a leader.
You're ready, our leader.
This is your destiny.
This is a Hello Sweetie Podcast Network production.